The 0-2, and it's strike three called. Throws him with a fastball. Julio Urias gets the last seven in a row, and the Los Angeles Dodgers have won the World Series for the first time since 1988.
For the first time in 32 years, the Los Angeles Dodgers are world champions, and baseball's season finale was 2020 in a nutshell. Compelling and controversial and chaotic. Jeff Passan breaks down how these Dodgers edged out the Rays and the unforgettably strange history we witnessed in the process. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, October 28th. This is ESPN Daily. Jeff Passan, you are somewhere in Arlington, Texas right now. It is 1:38 a.m. Eastern time. So where exactly are you? And I guess what's the last hour of your life been like?
I don't know where I am right now.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN and has been unbanned from this podcast after planting the Randy Arozarena song in all of our brains last week.
I'm living in coronavirus hell right now because Pablo, I've been covering baseball for 17 years now. I have seen the Boston Red Sox win their first World Series in 86 years. I've seen the Chicago Cubs win their first World Series in 108 years. And I'm not sure that I've seen anything as crazy as what happened after the Los Angeles Dodgers won their first World Series in 32 years tonight.
I mean, let's get right into this then, because what was the weirdest baseball season ever has ended with the weirdest World Series aftermath ever, as you say. And there is a great game to dissect here, but it's really hard to bury the lead of Justin Turner, the Dodgers star third baseman, getting pulled sometime after his third at-bat in that game because he had apparently tested positive for COVID. And then a bunch of other stuff happened, Jeff, and that's where you come in. So what the hell happened?
I was scrambling as all of this was going on, Pablo, because Fox, right after the Dodgers won the World Series, announced on their broadcast that Justin Turner had tested positive for COVID-19.
But we start this show with some breaking news. After the completion of the game tonight, we were informed by Major League Baseball that Justin Turner received a positive COVID test. That's why he was removed from the game. We have no other details at this time.
I get the word that, yes, he had tested positive. And the way that the story was told to me was that Major League Baseball does one coronavirus test per day for players who are in the bubble and for family members and everybody else. That test from Monday got sent to their lab in Utah. The tests were run and they came back late. And that Justin Turner's test was the only one that was inconclusive. And as the inconclusive result for Justin Turner had come back, right around that same time, the tests from today that had been taken had arrived in Utah. Now, they were getting ready to spin the sample of Justin Turner from Monday to retest it and see if there were any different results. But they said, forget that, test the one that came in today. The results came back in about 2 hours around the seventh inning, at which point a positive had been confirmed. And immediately Major League Baseball was informed of this, called up the Los Angeles Dodgers. It was fed into the dugout and Justin Turner was pulled from the game and told to isolate. Justin Turner did not isolate. And that's the part, Pablo, that I think so many people are going to remember from this. The very odd scene on the field where Justin Turner at one point is taking a team picture with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he's sitting next to Dave Roberts, his manager, who also was not wearing a mask and who is a cancer survivor after he had tested positive for COVID-19. I think people out in the world saw that and said, what in God's name is going on here?
Yeah, I was one of those people out in the world in my living room, like so many others in their living rooms, wondering, wait a minute. This is a very sophisticated game with many protocols. How did Justin Turner get cleared to be out on the field doing all the things you just mentioned?
Justin Turner did not get cleared. Justin Turner just wanted to go celebrate with his friends, with his teammates, with his wife, who I saw a picture of him kissing on the field, and with all of the people who he won this championship with. I had a GM text me as this was going on. And he said, is there a super spreader event going on at the World Series right now? And it's not an unreasonable question to ask. Now, Justin Turner did say in a tweet that he's not feeling any symptoms, that he's doing all right. So that's great to hear. But it's not like this is a Los Angeles Dodgers team, Pablo, that hasn't had issues with COVID-19. Kenley Jansen, their longtime closer, somebody who's had two heart surgeries for an irregular heartbeat, contracted COVID-19 earlier this year. And he told ESPN's Ramona Shelburne earlier this week that he is still, months later, feeling after effects, feeling symptoms, not feeling like himself. And so when you take that knowledge and contrast it with what the Dodgers were doing, the emotions obviously were running high. They felt so good about what they had done. But when Justin Turner was told not to go back on the field, and Justin Turner went back on the field, nobody stopped him.
So let's get to the reason, arguably, why there is no Game 7 to a lot of people's relief, although not to Kevin Cash, the manager of the Rays. It is the sixth inning, Jeff Passan. Let's get to the game itself. It's the sixth inning. There is one out, and the starter for Tampa Bay, Blake Snell, has 9 strikeouts. He's pitching great. 4 pitches are all working, and he gives up a single to Austin Barnes, just the second hit he has given
up. Pablo,
can I
interrupt
at
you
this
for a
point,
second? I just got a DM from a high-profile active player right now that says, what the f*** is going on? If that does not tell you everything you need to know about this night and about this World Series and about this season and about this year, I really don't know what does.
There's so much what the f***ness to dive into before we even got to the virus.
I was starting to write my lead for this story. And the first two words, and this was before Justin Turner tested positive, the first two words were, how 2020. And that was related more to the decision that the Rays had made to pull Blake Snell from the game in the midst of this gem that he was pitching.
Blake Snell will not face top of the order third time around. They saw what happened in the fifth inning. Snell is not saying anything, showing his displeasure, but he is showing his displeasure with a little shake of the head. He is not happy that he is out. He was fantastic tonight.
You know, Major League Baseball in 2020 had a higher percentage of innings pitched by relief pitchers, 44.47%, than it had ever had in the past. And part of that reason, Pablo, is because teams like the Tampa Bay Rays believe in the idea of getting outs more than their starting pitcher going a particular length of time. And Kevin Cash was not the type of manager who was going to deviate from the plan. He danced with the girl who brung him there. And that girl was going to the bullpen the third time through the order. He said he did not want Blake Snell facing Mookie Betts, who he had struck out twice.
Personally, I felt Blake had done his job and then some. Mookie coming around for the third time through, I value that. I totally respect and understand the questions that come with it. Blake gave us every opportunity to win. He was outstanding. They're not easy decisions.
He did not want Blake Snell facing Justin Turner, who he had struck out twice. And so Nick Anderson comes into the game having given up a run in his previous 6 appearances. and proceeds to give up a double to Mookie Betts immediately. A wild pitch scores the first run, Austin Barnes.
The set and the 0-1 on the way, and it's blocked, but it bounces away from Zunino. Kicks away to his left, and in to score is Barnes. Betts comes to third, and the Dodgers tie it on a wild pitch.
And Mookie Betts advances to third. Infield is in, and there's a chopper to first base by Corey Seager.
And the 1-1 to Seager, a swing and a bouncing ball to first.
And just like earlier in this series, Mookie Betts had gotten a good lead, had gotten a good secondary lead, and beat the throw home.
Choi coming home, not in time. Betts slides in safely ahead of the throw, and the Dodgers lead 2-1.
And that right there was all the Los Angeles Dodgers needed to win this championship.
Well, let's take a deep breath, because there's a lot to unpack here, Jeff. So the decision and Kevin Cash dancing with the girl who is not, unfortunately, named Blake Snell at that point in the game. This was something that felt like a mixture of a baseball strategy debate and this culture war between eye tests and analytics, between the Dodgers and Rays, framed as humanity versus math. What was the tension there? Explain that to me.
This is something, Pablo, that's been percolating in baseball for, you know, going on two decades now. And it's interesting that this World Series featured the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Tampa Bay Rays, because the president of baseball operations for the Dodgers, Andrew Friedman, cut his teeth as general manager of the Tampa Bay Rays. All of the things that the Rays have done so well really started with the hiring of Andrew Friedman with the Rays. And what he did was take all of those things, bring them to the Dodgers, and supersize them. They have four times the size payroll. They have more employees and people working in analytics. You know, they have a decision sciences department, essentially, that is run by brilliant people. And the Dodgers do a lot of those same things as the Rays do. It just tends to be papered over by the fact that they've got Mookie Betts, they've got Clayton Kershaw, they've got Corey Seager, they've got guy after guy after guy who's a star, whereas the Rays have done it on a skinflint budget with guys whose names most people don't know. And so I think what's happening here is that the Rays are getting blamed for what a lot of other teams do, but they're also getting blamed for where the game has gone. And the question at this point is, has the pendulum shifted too much in favor of analytics to the point now where something as simple as leaving a dominant starting pitcher in is not considered the right move? And if that's the case, Pablo, what does that say about modern baseball, where the game is right now and where the game is going? You have to understand how these decisions are made. It's not like it used to be where the manager had the absolute choice to do something or to not do something, and it was on him. These decisions are made in concert with the front office at this point. Let's also go back to Game 7 of the ALCS. Charlie Morton was dealing for the Rays against the Houston Astros. And Kevin Cash came out with two outs in the inning and took him out and brought in Nick Anderson. And Nick Anderson ended up getting the out and getting out of, I believe it was the sixth inning. And the Rays end up winning that game. You know, this is going to be one of those things that second guessed for years to come.
I guess that brings us, Jeff, to Mookie Betts, because beyond the home run he also hits in this game and all the stuff he had done in this series defensively, I mean, this was a trade to the Dodgers from the Red Sox to LA that was called historic for a reason that now seems obvious. I mean, we've talked a lot about it. Now that the Dodgers have the title in hand, what else can we say about the role of Mookie Betts on this particular edition of the Dodgers?
I think it was fitting that Mookie Betts hit the home run. I believe it was in the eighth inning for an insurance run for the Dodgers.
0-2 the count on Betts. And a swing and a ball driven. Left center field. It's gone! Betts hits one into the Rays bullpen and extends the lead. The Dodgers now lead 3-1.
Because Mookie Betts was the missing piece, it turns out. And Dave Roberts had said earlier in this series, if we had Mookie Betts in 2018 and the Red Sox didn't, we would have beaten the Red Sox in the World Series that year. That's how much of an impact Mookie Betts had.
All right, Jeff, after the break, let's get deeper into this Dodgers championship team.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Jeff, at the start of this season, you predicted on this very podcast that the Dodgers would win the World Series. You called them a baseball juggernaut. So tell me what's so special about this team.
Boy, everything. I mean, they hit, they pitch, they play solid enough defense. And it was interesting to look at this World Series as a whole, because every game, it felt like the Dodgers were the better team. Now, Blake Snell, even though he got yanked early also in Game 2, was excellent and beat them there. Game 4 was one of those absolutely insane madcap games that I know I'm going to look back on. And the way it ended was the Dodgers asserting their will. They're just such a solid team. And you saw that today. Pablo, they pitched a bullpen game to win the World Series. Tony Gonsolin, their starter in Game 6, was not very good. But after he gave up that home run to Randy Arozarena in the first inning, Dodgers didn't give up another run. You saw Dylan Floro come in and throw 3 straight changeups to Arozarena to get out of the jam that Gonsolin had created. You saw Victor Gonzalez come in and shove. They got 2 innings from Alex Wood, which nobody was expecting. And then at the end of the game, Julio Urias, in the same way that he did when they had come back from down 3-1 to the Atlanta Braves in the NLCS, going and pitching those final 3 innings and getting those final 9 outs. It was just a sign of how deep the Dodgers really are and what makes them so great. And the fact that they had Walker Buehler, their ace, who was literally in the hole waiting for a Game 7, the Dodgers were well positioned to begin with, but how they closed this thing out was as impressive as anything as I've seen in a while.
I wanted to get to the guy who won MVP of the World Series, Corey Seager, at this particular moment, but you mentioned Randy Arozarena, and just like hair all over my body just stood up straight because you did this to me. You did this to all of us, Jeff. And I want to be clear about this too. That's the guy who would have been MVP if the Rays had somehow pulled off this World Series.
Here's the 0-1 and a slider out there again, and Arozarena pokes it to right field and it's gone. Unbelievable. He took a slider off the outside corner, hits it the other way, and the Rays strike early on another home run by Randy Arozarena.
I mean, he is everything that you said. He is a guy who hits. His name is Randy Arozarena. Every time he takes a swing, it's a thing. It's a cosa buena. All of it is true, Jeff. All of it is true. He had a home run, his 10th home run of the postseason for that fleeting 1-0 lead. I mean, let's just acknowledge what he did in this series.
What I mean, Pablo, what did I tell you?
I haven't been able to get it out of my brain since the last time when I banned you and then had to unban you because it turns out you're essential to understanding baseball.
I think Randy Arozarena put on the best postseason performance I've seen since David Ortiz, I believe, hit .688 in the World Series in 2013. I'm excited to see where the Randy Arozarena experiment goes from here. He just kept doing it. I mean, remember, they held him in check for the first couple of games. And I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, with my stupid song, did I jinx this poor man? It turns out, no, Randy Arozarena is jinxless and he is the cosa buena.
I just want people to know, you texted me at one point, Randy Arozarena is going to play and probably be good for another decade, which just means I'm in this prison for 10 more years in which I have to listen to you.
There's a guy who hits, his name's Randy Arozarena. Every time he takes a swing, it is a thing, it's cosa buena. Running around the bases, he's as fast as a hyena.
Arozarena. Oh, God, that was... Let's get to Corey Seager, Jeff, because I feel so bad. The guy who did ultimately win MVP is a guy that I admittedly and now very clearly have overlooked for so much of this series, and that's the shortstop, Corey Seager. So that guy wins the coveted World Series MVP trophy. What do you make of that? Was this the right pick to you?
After, by the way, he won the NLCS MVP trophy.
That's right. That's right.
In 2019, he was solid, but not spectacular. This year, the Corey Seager who showed up was just carrying over from the regular season. Like he wasn't this good during the regular season, but he hit .307. He slugged .585. And he's a guy who's going to be hitting free agency with this amazing class of shortstops after the 2021 season that includes Francisco Lindor, Carlos Correa, Javier Baez, and Trevor Story. I don't know if it's the Bryce Harper, Manny Machado class necessarily, just because those two guys had so much hype surrounding them. But I have never seen in my 17 years covering baseball a plethora of players at the same position of this quality potentially hitting free agency at the same time. And Corey Seager, who had kind of fallen behind his peers there, I almost don't want to call them like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's almost like 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, and 1E. That's how good all of those guys are.
Yeah, it's going to be a glorious offseason for Corey Seager. Maybe second only to how Clayton Kershaw must be feeling going into this offseason. Because, Jeff, we don't need to rehash the narrative, capital T, capital N, at this point, but he was supposed to be haunted by this time of year. And now he's a World Series champion, and he gets called out by Dave Roberts immediately. People are crying for him around the country. I mean, Dodger fans are doing that. So is this whole thing officially put to bed, the Clayton Kershaw postseason story?
Can I be honest? I don't care. To me, the whole narrative around Clayton Kershaw was problematic from the start. And it was problematic because I felt like he was held to the standard that he exhibited during the regular season. And that's just not a particularly fair thing to do, considering that Clayton Kershaw has arguably been the best regular season pitcher of like the last 50 years. Like that's how good he's been, you know, multiple Cy Youngs, a career ERA of 2.43 in an era where home runs have gone through the roof. Clayton Kershaw now is where he belongs. And that's as a champion. And to see him in the bullpen in the ninth inning when Julio Urias is securing those final outs and putting his hands in the air and running out, and the smile on his face was so pure, it was so genuine, and it was so deserved. Because you know what? He pitched well this postseason. 30 and two-thirds innings, 37 strikeouts, 5 walks, an ERA under 3, 2 wins in the World Series. He did his job. And he's not the same Clayton Kershaw he was when he was winning Cy Young Awards. He's not throwing the mid-90s fastball anymore. You know, he's lucky to get to 92, and he's had to adjust as a pitcher. But isn't that sort of life? Isn't that sports, that when you don't have what you did when you were young, you have a choice? And that choice is that you can adjust, you can humble yourself, you can recognize that even though you aren't who you once were talent-wise, that as you grow and as you become a more self-aware person, you can be better. Clayton Kershaw turned into a better person, and that made him, I think, a better pitcher.
So I want to zoom out here now on the Dodgers as this franchise, because this was their first championship in 32 years. And I was watching Dave Roberts, and putting aside all of the COVID complications, it was hard not to feel something for that guy. And it was hard not to feel something for this organization and this fan base and this city. So what did you make of the Dodgers finally getting over this particular hump?
You know, I think that Dave Roberts has been a guy who at times has been rightly maligned for his decision making. But the decision making that will stick with me from this postseason has to do with two pitchers, Clayton Kershaw and Julio Urías. Dave Roberts, 24 hours before he won a World Series championship, got booed by a crowd that was almost entirely Dodger fans at a neutral site stadium. It was a really weird thing. Clayton Kershaw, this guy who's got all these supposed demons in October, is getting a standing ovation coming off the field for people who think he should have stayed in the game. It was just a very bizarro situation. And you know what? I think Dave Roberts made the right move there. And people are always going to say, process over outcome, process over outcome. The Rays died on that mantra. And you know what? Dave Roberts lived on it. He ended up going with Julio Urías for the last three innings of the clincher in the NLCS and the last three innings of the clincher in the World Series. He had Clayton Kershaw and Kenley Jansen, his two rocks, out in the bullpen, ready and willing to go. And he said, nah, I'm gonna stick with the kid who's pitching. He stuck with the guy who looked good. And that is one thing that Kevin Cash did not do. And there's an argument to be made that they lost the World Series because of that. And then you look at Julio Urías standing there and Austin Barnes catching that called third strike and grabbing the ball with his right hand and stuffing it in his back pocket. That's history in his back pocket right there. And the celebration that came afterward and all of the madness and weirdness and oddity of 2020 being wrapped up in such a perfect bow.
Thank you for the season and you're banned again, by the way.
Okay, that's totally fine. I look forward to you calling or texting at some point and telling me I'm unbanned because you want to talk about baseball again.
Yeah, that's going to happen soon.
Yep.
All right, coming up. A city, a nation, and the great one, Wayne Gretzky himself. Say goodbye to a sports icon, one you probably don't know.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. The legend of Joey Moss can be traced back to one random night 30 years ago when 19-year-old Wayne Gretzky walked into an Edmonton bar and saw the singer who'd become his first serious girlfriend, Joey's older sister, Vicky. At the time, Joey was this utterly anonymous teenager with Down syndrome, working at a local bottle depot. But as Wayne got to know the Moss family, he kept seeing Joey waiting for the bus to work every morning, alone, in minus 40 degree weather. So in 1984, Wayne offered Joey a gig as an attendant in the Edmonton Oilers locker room, where he wound up filling water bottles and handing out towels and radiating this unstoppable positivity that would make Joey Moss an icon to a city and a country and a sport, as the great one himself once observed.
When Joey started working in the locker room part-time, we used to tease that he was going to be there one day and we were all going to be gone. Well, Joey's still there.
Joey Moss died on Monday at age 57, having conclusively fulfilled his good friend's prophecy. Over his 35-year tenure with the Oilers, Joey wound up outlasting every single player and every single coach. But even more than that, Edmonton discovered what the Moss family had known forever. Joey was not just the consummate teammate. He was a born entertainer, and his sister Vicky was far from the only singer in the family. Before every home game, without fail, Joey would be there, standing right behind the Oiler bench, famously belting out O Canada, before putting in another night of work. Until the very end, in fact, he was there for everything. Dancing, high-fiving, making virtually everyone feel that much better, whether they were scuffling along that season or winning the Stanley Cup. That's why current and former Oilers like Gretzky and Connor McDavid and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins are all in mourning this week, posting their own personal remembrances. It's why fans are leaving flowers at a mural of Joey in downtown Edmonton, and it's why petitions are circulating to rename the Community Ice Arena in his honor. And it's why the Canadian government has honored Joey Moss as an inspiration to people dealing with disabilities, people who were kept away from the spotlight for too long, people who were left out in the cold. He's the most famous guy in Edmonton, the Oilers' longtime equipment manager once said of Joey. And he doesn't even know it. But now, some 30 years after the random night that changed his life, you do. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.